When you think of a company like General Electric, consumer products like light bulbs, toasters, and washing machines are likely to come to mind, but the huge conglomerate also has a financial services division called GE Capital. And if GE Capital were a bank, it would rank as one of the largest in the United States. On today's first underreported segment, we'll look into just what GE Capital does and what impact it's having on the financial health of its parent company. Joining me now is Justin Baer. He is a U.S. business reporter with the Financial Times. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
GE Capital was originally founded under a different name as part of General Electric in 1932. What was it supposed to do at that time?
Sure. I think as many industrial companies did, they set up finance arms to help some of their customers basically purchase their equipment. So in GE's case, as they still do today, had a big appliance business. Families who were looking to buy washing machines and other products for their home often would turn to GE to help finance those purchases, and it kind of built from there. GE then looked to apply that same model to a lot of the other businesses over the next few decades. Looking at aviation being one, but certainly other parts of their commercial operations, they found opportunities to extend financing to customers.
Now, how is this any different than what Sears might have done when it created its credit card?
Sure, and in some ways, it's very similar. And in fact, GE to this day still has a credit card business within their consumer finance arm. But clearly, the origins are the same. The idea is the same. At what point, though, GE found that there were major profits to be had by continuing to build out this business? They found that there was this incredible opportunity to capitalize on being one of the largest, most financially secure companies in the world that until recently had a AAA rating, and they found that they could borrow more often at lower prices and in turn lend that out. And lend out more, at lower rates. So it really became a way to ratchet up profits, and it was an engine that drove really the company's growth for several decades.
In fact, by 2007, profits from GE Capital accounted for 55% of the company's total. That was just 2 years ago, one and a half years ago. What about today? Where does that percentage stand?
Well, it was actually close to 50% last year. Company that GE Capital made upwards of about $9 billion, which for them was a down year, but compared to some of the bank only financial institutions, they did quite well. Of course, looking out into this year, it will be a much different story. And in fact, a lot of the concern that's been out there about GE Capital and of course about GE as a whole has been centered on the results that business is able to churn out this year and beyond, both in terms of profits, but certainly perhaps for many investors of greater concern is the drag it will have on the parent in terms of depleting some cash and also the reserves it may have to take in various parts of the portfolio for losses.
GE Capital has been described in The Economist as part of the shadow banking system. So was it offering financial products similar to what companies like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers had on the market?
No. It's quite different from those situations in that some of the most toxic assets that we've seen talked about and that have really exposed weaknesses at other institutions, they were able to steer clear of in recent decades.
So what are the problems? What are the things that are making them so vulnerable then?
Sure. I think it's first and foremost, they're not making as much money from the business they do have. They have a substantial consumer lending operation that focuses on, as I said, on credit cards, on consumer banking in parts of the world like Eastern Europe, whose economies are weakening right now. On the commercial side, clearly they're being hurt by the economy's downturn in various parts of the world. Another hotspot.
Wait, stop for a second. They're making real estate loans in Eastern Europe?
They have been, sure. I mean, they've had, for the last decade or so, they've had actual banks in many countries like Poland and have been lending out to consumers.
Are they bound by the same banking regulations other banks are?
In those nations, yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, It's obviously different in the U.S., but certainly they are considered banks or licensed banks in those countries.
But not in the United States. They're not bound by any banking regulations.
They are banked. It's different. I mean, they clearly have the disclosure rules that banks, that federally chartered banks must comply with are not the case for non-bank companies like GE. That's actually been a source of stress for them because they've had to prove to investors around the world that they are not sort of quote-unquote time bombs within the GE Capital profile. And part of that is originating from the fact that they haven't had to disclose as much information as, say, a bank like JP Morgan. So they've tried to make an effort to do more, but clearly the regulations are different for them. But as we've learned earlier today, that may actually be maybe changing in the not too distant future.
Well, Moody's called GE Capital the conglomerate's biggest vulnerability. Last year, the GE stock price dropped over 72% on fears about GE Capital's portfolio. Are there good reasons for investors to be worried?
I think, it's hard for anyone to look at a financial services company given the events of the last year and say you should be overwhelmingly confident about the near term or even about how that industry may look over the long haul. I think what hasn't helped GE has been some of the credibility they lost with investors. They've made, over the course of the last year, a couple setbacks when they had promised to hold on to the dividend that they've been giving out, that they had planned to do what they could to maintain the AAA rating from Moody's and S&P. At one point, very recently, they had to concede that that wasn't going to happen anymore. So they also missed earnings a few times last year, which for GE was something that just didn't happen for several decades. So it's been a rough year for them, and they've lost some credibility and from investors that already were not terribly comfortable with companies that have sizable financial services businesses. So that's still a risk. I mean, clearly the outlook for GE Capital in the near term, GE maintains that that's still going to make money this year. You talk to many analysts, they don't see that being necessarily possible. If you take out some tax credits they're expected to get this year. So clearly in the next year, it'll be a pretty rough time. But again, I think if you go back to the credibility issue, I think part of the reason why the stock has declined to the degree that it has is that people do, there are some investors out there that I think are nervous about what lies beneath the surface that the company hasn't shared with them yet. And again, if you talk to GE Capital executives, you talk to Jeff Immelt, who's a CEO, or Keith Sharon, the CFO, they'll maintain that there's nothing there, that what you see is what you get, that there'll be losses, sure, but there's nothing none of the toxic stuff that have overwhelmed so many of the world's largest financial institutions just simply doesn't apply to them.
A listener left a comment on the show page on our website asking, how does GE get the capital to finance? Does it come from their general funds, or does the finance unit borrow specifically for its own needs?
It does borrow for its own needs.
So it's really a separate unit totally? There's no synergy involved here?
Well, I mean, it is in a sense that it's wholly owned by GE. They can, when people lend to GE Capital, they do so knowing they're tethered to this massive massive institution. So there is that knowledge, and in fact, what we've seen over several times in the last few months that GE has in fact diverted lots of cash to GE Capital to make sure that it has enough to get through the next year. So we saw they sold about $15 billion of stock late last year to investors like Warren Buffett. And I think at the time they had hoped that they would be able to keep some of those proceeds to look at acquisitions at some of their industrial businesses. That kind of went out the window as the picture at GE Capital continued to deteriorate. So they actually had to send that money over to GE Capital. The corporate parent recently cut their dividend in part to save about $9 billion a year. That will also give GE Capital more cushion. So it does borrow on its own. It does issue debt on its own. But clearly, it's a known affiliate of GE, the corporate parent, and does in fact and has taken advantage of the fact that they were part of this much bigger company.
My guest is Justin Baer, who's a U.S. business reporter with the Financial Times. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Is this unique to General Electric? Last week, labor lawyer Thomas Geegan was a guest on our show, and he said that U.S. industrial firms were lured away from producing goods by the promise of large profits that could be made from complex financial instruments.
I mean, there are other companies, industrial companies, that have had their own in-house finance arm. None, I would say, though, would rival GE as far as size on either side, either on the industrial side or the financial arm. That's a good question, whether there were opportunities that they didn't pursue because they had so much capital.
And shutting down their manufacturing arms.
Right. I mean, I think it comes in waves. One of the reasons why it became such a big part of what they do is that they wanted to smooth out earnings. That you had many of these industrial businesses that were very cyclical, and that could having a big finance arm could help ensure that they were not reporting substantially lower earnings overall when many of those markets turn down. So. And again, there are ways in which you can benefit greatly by having a finance arm, by being able to extend financing to win orders for some of the equipment you make. But clearly, as an organization, you have to set priorities and you have to decide which business gets capital, which business you look to sell. And so clearly, there probably were some hard choices. The GE and practically every company that have had this finance piece. Have to make decisions that clearly affected the whole portfolio.
Well, James Schrager of the University of Chicago School of Business told The Economist that GE used GE Capital like a cookie jar and dipped into the finance arm for last-minute sales of assets so the company could meet its business profit projections and obviously keep its AAA rating. That hasn't worked. But what is the situation now with Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner announcing new regulations on the financial industry today? He said he wants new laws granting his department authority over financial institutions other than banks. Would that apply to something like GE Capital? And would he have the authority to seize GE Capital?
It certainly seems that way. I mean, they are non-bank financial institution. There are a few that would be rival GE Capital in size. So clearly, it would seem as though the plan to sort of create this sort of universal regulator would certainly affect GE Capital, both in terms of capital requirements that they may have, disclosure requirements, bring them up to what the large, federally chartered banks have. Now GE will say, and GE Capital will say, that you look at for instance, their capital ratios, the way you would measure financial strength, that they rival many of the largest banks. But clearly they would be, if they fall under a similar regulatory program of some of the banks, there would be more they'd have to share and more details. And it could affect the way in which they look at their balance sheet, the way in which they look at their capacity to lend to customers.
GE Capital's energy division has announced it plans to invest upwards of $4 billion in energy projects this year. What kinds of projects would they be looking for, and do you think the company is looking to profit from President Obama's emphasis on developing new energy sources?
No, without a doubt, and it certainly extends beyond the U.S. If you look around the world, one of the really overarching themes of Jeff Immelt, the CEO, has been looking to build out the energy business, both in terms of the making the actual infrastructure equipment that goes into, say, power grids, or they make it gas turbines that would be used in pipelines around the world. So clearly, they're looking to ride the wave of infrastructure improvement and replacement over the next few decades.
Thank you so much for talking with us today. Justin Baer is a U.S. business reporter for the Financial Times.
Thanks for having me.